Welcome to Learn to Live Stress-Free. This is Christine Wright with Dr. Robert Wright Jr., your go-to wellness coaches of www.stressfreenow.info. Our featured guests today are Kurt and Joan Vega. Our topic is the power of open focus as a restorative force for healing. Kurt Vega is a certified open focus trainer and a professor of social media courses at the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City. He is also a musician and composer. Kurt has worked with neurofeedback pioneer Dr. Les Femi and his partner, Susan Shore Femi, licensed clinical social worker of the Princeton Biofeedback Center in Princeton since 2008. Kurt produces and co-hosts the monthly Ask Dr. Femi Open Focus Attention teleseminar series with Joan Griffiths Vega. Kurt's expertise extends to and includes the theory and practice of achieving peak performance states, optimizing work habits, and finding balance by using open focus. He has been fascinated for many years by the flow state, that quality of mind that high-performance athletes, musicians, and artists refer to as indispensable to their creativity and achievement. Joan Griffiths Vega has extensive training in mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR for short, from the University of Massachusetts Center for Mindfulness in Medicine, Healthcare, and Society. She studied with Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn and Dr. Saki Santarelli. In 2008, Joan introduced her adapted MBSR workshop for family caregivers to the Martha Stewart Center for Living at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. She co-teaches her caregiver mindfulness stress reduction workshop with Dr. Patricia Bloom. The workshop addresses the needs of family caregivers who have experienced significant stress while caring for a person with dementia or chronic disease. Joan is also involved in several mindfulness-based research projects at Mount Sinai. Concerned with other practical ways to create a balanced life, Joan became a certified coach of open focus attention and has begun to integrate it with mindfulness stress reduction workshops, as well as using it in research projects that focus on pain relief. Kurt and Joan, we are honored to have you as our guests. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Kurt and Joan, I want to thank you for being our featured guests today, and welcome to our audience. Kurt and Joan, please tell us about yourself and what led you to the work that you are both currently doing.
Okay, I guess I'll start since I sort of pushed us along the road, as Joan was reminding me the other day. And I'll go through it quickly, but of course, as I was going through it, it was more of a journey, a longer journey. But really, interestingly enough, a lot of this started for us with 9/11. So I work down in Tribeca area, and fortunately, we were actually out of town. We were on vacation on 9/11, but when I came back, that whole area below Canal Street was blocked off. It was really horrific, and of course, much more horrific for people that were actually there. People in my office could see what was happening from one of the windows in the building that we were in. And I'd always had an interest in various human potential, various modalities. But we were both interested in meditation, but we'd never really done it. And the anxiety that was stirred up during that event really led us to our first hands-on, brain-on experience with MBSR. So we found somebody that was teaching a mindfulness-based stress reduction, and it's an 8-week course, and we went through it, and it was really fantastic, and we both established practices out of that. So that was probably like around 2002, and Joan, I'll let Joan tell her story, but I guess that's sort of what started that out. And then around in 2008 is when I was introduced to Open Focus. And like many, many people, I picked up the Open Focus brain. I thought, gee, you know, there might be a few tips in here. I really didn't think it would be very much. You know, I thought, oh, you know, here's this psychologist and he's in Princeton. And I probably leafed through it and it looked interesting, but I had set it aside. And in 2008, there were many things. We had a fire in our house. There were just a lot of things that were happening in 2008, including, of course, you know, for the world. 2008 was not a great year. And I found that even though I was doing several things, including my MBSR meditation and also brain entrainment, where you're actually listening to these two different sounds and it puts you into different brainwave states. But I was finding that these things were really being swamped, and I was really not having a really great perspective on, you know, what was happening, and I was having some bouts of anxiety. I picked up the Open Focus book, and there's a CD with it, and I threw the CD on, and I was absolutely blown away that, like, right away I felt a difference. And then I started reading it, and I was so impressed with it. And you know, I called up the Princeton office, and it, you know, we lived in Brooklyn and they were in Princeton, and it was doable to go out and start working with them. And of course that meant being able to be on the EEG machines, and I found it incredibly helpful and very, very powerful. So that was sort of my start, and I went on to, you know, do the training and start to do some social media consulting with Dr. Femi, because at that point he didn't have a presence. So things sort of went from there.
Great.
Well, I sort of, after my experience with taking our first MBSR course post 9/11, I realized that if I had had this understanding while I had been caregiving my mother, it could have been a decidedly less stressful experience. And so I was very fortunate that our MBSR teacher really supported me in doing the prerequisites of retreats and the practicum, and then beginning to teach. And so I did, attending to the population of caregiving and or caregivers. And I've found since then, and the merit of mindfulness-based stress reduction as a way of reducing stress for the caregiver to be quite profound. And we did some research on the concept of it as an intervention before and after the 8-week workshop, and it proved very positive in the research results. And so I then became, I was watching Kurt integrate Open Focus into his own life, and it was quite amazing for me to watch. And so I finally was in a place of less stress where I could begin to learn again. And so I went out to one of the 3-day conferences, that workshops that Dr. Femi and Susan Shore-Femi have, and learned how to use the machines and what Open Focus was, and thought it was amazing, because the one place that I never found really persuasive personally results was in working with pain, but Open Focus sort of provided me with an experience of reducing and dissolving pain. And I mentioned it to a couple of people, and we, particularly Dr. Patricia Bloom, who I co-facilitated with at Mount Sinai, and she got very excited and did her own adaptation for pain dissolving, and developed several relationships with people at Mount Sinai to work with post-surgical, to do some research about managing post-surgical pain. And because she's on the East Coast, West Coast right now, I'm the one who does the workshop or teaches the individual, and they use her CD. And you know, right now, it's only a year into the research. I certainly have respect for how long gold standard research takes. It takes forever to get enough people to agree and do the process and then look at the results. But the early indications is that people seem to manage their stress or reduce their stress, and wean themselves understandably slowly after their pain medication, using dissolving pain and open focus. So, and it's just amazing to me to watch people develop a different relationship to their stress. So it's essentially what my history is.
Great. Kurt and Joan, I want to thank you, and actually we'd like to thank you both again for being our featured guests today. I know our audience is in for a real treat. Recent studies show that chronic pain costs the American economy over $600 billion per year, and that 1 in 3 Americans suffer from some form of chronic pain. That means that over 100 million people in our country are in some type of serious pain and dealing with that. Can you tell our audience how and why Open Focus works to reduce and dissolve chronic pain?
Well, that's a very good question. I think one of the amazing things about Dr. Femi's work, I find it very concentrated. He really works through whatever problem he's tackling. And the pain one, he recounts that in both of his books, The Open Focus Brain and Dissolving Pain. And he had an incident with a kidney stone. And if anybody's had a kidney stone, you realize that that is not a pain that you can convince yourself that you're not having. It's very intense. You know, so I was very interested that's what he was using, because I have had a kidney stone and I know how intense it is. And I would say that, as Joan was saying, you know, this research process really takes a long time, and I don't think we really absolutely know how it works. I know that it works because I've worked with it myself, and I've also worked with people that have had serious pain. I had one person that I was working with that you ask in the beginning to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, and it was often an 11, and you could get it down to 0, and that's an amazing thing. I will say that also what Dr. Femi has done in terms of his explanation of how it works, and of course he says, you know, the pain is in the brain, and I just want to say for anybody that is in pain or has experienced it, he's not saying that it's an imaginary thing, and it doesn't discount the fact that there could be tissue damage or something localized. But what he is saying, especially when it's a chronic pain, is that that switch has been turned on, and it's very difficult to turn it off. And that's what the open focus dissolving pain technique attempts to do. And he gives the example of a phantom limb pain, where you have possibly an intense pain that doesn't go away, and yet the physical limb where you're feeling that pain doesn't exist. So that only leaves you with one conclusion, that the pain is in the brain. And by going through the open focus dissolving pain technique, which is really going through a series of attentional shifts, very specific attentional shifts, you're able to dissolve many of those things. And he also views psychological discomfort as a pain. So do you have any other questions about that?
Well, I wanted to hear Joan's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I have my own views about the pain in the brain. I think that makes sense, and you know, I've had conversations with Dr. Femi about that. But if we go down that road, we will be here for a long while. But that your explanation, Kurt, of Dr. Femi's position was well said.
Yes, it was, Kurt. Thank you. Well, I have been working on with this material from an experiential point of view, and I have probably a less well-researched understanding of it than Kurt. So I just say that up front. But basically, I believe that as people work with open focus and go through dissolving pain, there is a substantially, as Kurt mentioned, an attentional shift that because most people are not even aware of the fact that they're in narrow focused attention. And when you're working with anybody who works with pain, whether it be an MBSR or any of the other modalities that they may have developed, one of the basic concepts is that the narrow focusing or the focusing down and the tensing of the body increases pain. So anytime one can find a path that allows them to begin to relax the body means that the pain is already going to diminish. That's like the first level. And then with using, being able to get into a diffused attentional state and then become immersed in the pain rather than trying to turn away from the pain, which is most people's normal reaction, really allows people to then dissolve their pain. And even if the pain doesn't go away 100%, although a lot of people experience it as going away 100%, there's such a different relationship to it that it's not so profoundly dominating the quality of one's life. So it becomes a background noise rather than a foreground overwhelming experience. So how does that work? My best understanding is that the brain goes into a synchronous pattern in alpha, and rather than being in, and here I'm blocking.
Beta.
Rather than being in normal beta states. That's in terms of neurological science. So,
thank you, Joan. Thank you, Kurt. And I appreciate that we have these men who are so scientifically based in their information. I do want to make a comment that what I have found with the open focus work as a beautiful test, beyond the how it works, is that when I do it, I feel better. The first time Bob introduced me to it, I was unfamiliar, and I just knew that I felt better. So that, to me, was enough of a selling point.
That's true.
Great. And Kurt, since you had asked me what my comment was about the pain, I guess the number one thing that I would say about open focus in terms of pain would be that what Dr. Femi and his wife Susan have done is given a tremendous gift to the world. And I say that because besides all the technical aspects of open focus in terms of how it works, the main thing that it does is that it helps to shift the locus of control for pain relief to the individual.
And
I think that alone, and I would have to say from personal experience, it doesn't work. It's not a panacea. It doesn't work 100% of cases, because I know there was a point where I had a pinched nerve, and Dr. Femi even says that, if you have a physical malady, like a broken leg, the bone is broken, that's not what we're really talking about. However, what amazes me most about open focus when I've been away from it, say, for a week or so, and I go back to it, and I actually said this to Dr. Femi, my experience with stress is like peeling the onion and the pain, peeling the onion. I cannot believe how much stuff is there, and then you go one level, and then you go, oh, my gosh, I have more stress, I have more pain, more anxiety, and it keeps coming off and dissolving. And that's really, for me, the beauty of open focus, that no matter how advanced you get, because I've been working with open focus since 2005, every time I come back to it and compare it to other techniques, it is amazing how effective it is.
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree with all your points, Bob, and the one that you put first, I think that's just it's so important, and I think Joan would agree too.
You're talking about the locus of control.
Yeah,
it
just is a complete a game changer for people that are in chronic pain.
So I'm just going to talk here a little bit about why I feel that I hope in the long run that mindfulness-based stress reduction and open focus come together. If you don't mind.
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. The one thing I do like about, I find that the mindfulness-based stress reduction program that people go through, one of the most elegant programs going. I mean, I'm always amazed at the structure of it, how it teaches people to meditate, and more than that, how it really creates a paradigm shift away from our analytical inclination of our culture, you know, go to a therapist or whatever, and it shifts the paradigm into there's more things right with you than wrong. And so from that point of view, with kindness, with a sense of curiosity, with what's considered to be a kind friendliness towards the self, the person learns deep self-care and self-compassion. A lot of pain is because people have an internal dialogue of, oh my God, how am I going to live my life? They jump into the future writing worst-case scenarios, which is a contraction again within the body because the body sees it's being criticized deeply. So to me, MBSR adds the other half, which is how to have a different relationship to the experience so that, you know, when, let's say you've done your open focus in the morning and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you're starting to become irritated and go into pain, you have the tools to understand what your thoughts, sensations, or emotions are and work with, from that point of view, as a skillful tool to recognize what you might need to do in the moment, which is maybe just sit down and have a cup of tea, or maybe you've skipped lunch, and so the body has gone into stress by not being able to rest, relax, or to be nourished. And the other thing that's really a really incredible component of the experience is being in community for that 8 weeks. People come together, they develop friendships, they see other people working, they get to learn from each other. And if a person discovers an aha moment in their meditation practice that they recognize where they've really been creating stress, other people in the group can find where that moment is for them. So the learning curve is very, very high. And the experience, as I've been introducing open focus and dissolving pain into the MBSR workshops, is that they perceive each other people experiencing things, and so there's a greater willingness to do the work. Because it's always difficult to develop a meditation practice, finding that half an hour every day to do some sort of sitting.
Thank you, Joan. That's really wonderful. You know, you said something that I think bears repeating, that the focus sometimes for many is that they're more to look for more things right than, society tends to focus on wrong. So certainly being in a community, as you said, and having that community support for the time that this practice is being learned is really helpful in moving people forward and not making themselves wrong. So I think that's very important to stress that.
Yeah, and there's a relief and a release in recognizing, you know, what we're so hypercritical of, in the places that we're so hypercritical towards ourselves is really what it means to be the human being. And, you know, so there's a kindness.
Yeah, very definitely. We can all be much more gentle with ourselves than we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Kurt, I want to ask you this question. In a visiting blog post on your dissolvingpain.com website, a blog post by Joan, who is a physician, spoke about how open focus helped her resolve her seemingly intractable insomnia. Can you discuss briefly for our audience how open focus helps to recalibrate your nervous system so that a person awakens alert, rested, and refreshed?
Yes, and I know that you have a lot to say about this subject too from your studies, but I think the open focus brain does a great job in outlining the physiological changes, which are profound just by changing the way that you're paying attention, which is always surprising to people, I think, when they come to the subject. So, you know, it was a wide range. And really, you know, I was thinking when we were talking before about Dr. Sarno, who Ken Malloy, who's also a trained open focus coach, worked very closely with Dr. Sarno. And he goes into a lot about, you know, the blood flow, the micro changes around a pain site. All these things are affected by the way that you pay attention. And many, many people have found relief around sleep, whether it's through becoming more aware of these repeated thoughts or just unwinding physiologically. So once you go into an open focus exercise, and you can use them actually leading you right into sleep, although, you know, Dr. Femi points out, when you're doing it daily, obviously you want to be sitting erect and so that you're awake, but you can use it to actually put yourself to sleep. So just by changing the way that you pay attention, diffusing your attention, a lot of these physiological changes will, you know, really are the outcome. So, you know, Dr. Femi never likes, and nor does MBSR like to use the word relax, really, but the physiological changes around the way that you pay attention are very profound.
Well, Kurt, I want to thank you for the explanation, and now I'll get in my 2 cents here.
I know you have.
I'm sure Les will get me for saying this, but I use the word relax all the time because I act. You know, when you think about the work that Herbert Benson did up at, and his team did up at Harvard, it's called the relaxation response. You know, that's just a term that they coined. But when you think about the beauty of what that really is, that it's relaxation, and what open focus can do is it can address and attack that from either the hyperarousal side of the equation or the hypoarousal side of the equation. And so what I mean to our audience members who might not be familiar with those terms is that open focus and certain other techniques, but the beauty of it, one of the main advantages is that you could be in the gym, you could be in a meeting, you can be jogging, and you can be using open focus. And, for example, I use open focus whenever I'm driving to become aware. It heightens my sixth sense awareness around me. And so, you know, which makes me a more careful and safe driver. And then on the hypo side, it would be massage and meditation, et cetera. And so any of those, although they appear opposite, they can result in similar phenomena if, you know, measured by equipment. So in terms of sleep, I'll just say briefly, my perspective is that what open focus does, the first thing it does in terms of increasing your capacity to sleep, fall asleep, is that it helps to dissolve bodily tension. And a lot of times when, you know, we get into bed, we don't always realize that how tense we are. Sometimes you touch a person's shoulders, you say, my goodness, your shoulders, oh my gosh, they feel like pieces of wood or steel. And so what open focus does, if you do it at bedtime, it helps to relax the muscles. So there I go, using that word relax, because that's what it's doing. It's relaxing the muscles. And then the second thing it does, and I know, Kurt and Joan, you probably be more familiar with this than me, to use this term, it helps to quiet the monkey mind, right? And that, you know, you're lying in bed thinking about all these things, and your left hemisphere is just going and going and going and going. And so what open focus does, it helps to quiet that. Richard Brown, who's an open focus certified by Dr. Femi, had written an article about how the thalamus is quieted. And so I believe that would help with sleep. And then the last thing is that, more specifically, the negative self-talk. I think Joan touched on this when she said that sometimes we can be critical of ourselves and harder on ourselves, I think, than other people. And so what the open focus does in terms of sleep is, by shutting down the negative self-talk, it creates space for sleep to happen. Because as we know, physiologically, certain neuroendocrine releases have to take place for sleep to take place.
And so that's really, all those points are good. And while you were talking, Bob, I was just thinking, because there are a lot of techniques. You know, Richard Brown also uses some breathing techniques, which are really powerful. I've taken one of his workshops, which are a combination of the breathing techniques and open focus. I think the work that he does is really fantastic. And, of course, you know, working with MBSR, a lot of meditation techniques. But I will say one of the things that I think that makes open focus so effective is that it brings in the idea of space right away. And you can add that idea to any of these other things, and it will make it more it will make them more effective, in my experience. That and the fact that it gives you a map of attention, you know, Dr. Femi's attentional styles, gives you, that can be added to anything that you're doing, and it can help you.
Great, Kurt. We're beginning to wind down here, so I want to just address the signature piece here, what we were to talk about, flow states, which is our title. So I wanted to ask you, both of you, regularly achieving fully immersed flow states for peak performance and peak experience are highly desirable state and sought after by many. Can you briefly define what flow is for our audience and how open focus works to generate an intentional state of flow?
Okay, I'll give it a try. You know, the flow state has been made popular by, and I will say over decades of work, the work of Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, who's worked for decades on flow. And what's really great and makes me happy is that this work has been picked up by another generation, and so people are really studying it. There's something called the Flow Genome Project, so people are working on looking at brainwave states and all sorts of things. And of course, it is very, you know, people do seek this state, especially athletes, because it can be the difference between, you know, being a top performer and being a mediocre performer. So I guess the how Csikszentmihalyi describes it is being totally immersed in an activity and to the point where you lose perspective on time. So time seems, the time instead of dilating seems to actually collapse. And you become totally immersed in it. So from looking at it from open focus attention theory, immersed is one of the attention styles, and it's really in many ways a narrow focused immersion. But I think what's coming out of the studies right now is that the most important thing for people that are using it, like athletes and, you know, top performers, is the fact that you people that are able to get into the state gain a certain control over their attentional styles. So attentional flexibility, which is very, very stressed in open focus, is critically important. And they're sequenced together. And, you know, if people want to delve into this more, they could look into the book called The Rise of Superman. And people are just studying it now. So it's not just one state, but that the state that people would call flow is really, when you measure it with an EEG and you're looking at the brain waves, it's basically low alpha, high theta EEG signature. And a lot of things happen in that space. And so it means that you're feeling that things are rolling. It's almost a magical feeling that of ease in doing whatever you need to do. And that's also, interestingly enough, the signature state for when people have a flash of insight, and that is measured in EEG by going into the gamma range. So you can see that even if you're doing mental work, being in that flow state would be very important. But all the attentional styles are really used, and they're used in a certain sequence. But when you're in sort of the classic one, you would be in low alpha, high theta, which again is right in the range that you measure when you're doing open focus exercises on the EEG machine, maybe a little higher. They usually aim for right in the middle of the range, 10 hertz. But I guess that's sort of the overview of it.
Thank you, Kurt. That's very excellent. Joan, do you have some thoughts on this that you'd like to share with us also?
I think Kurt has really spent a lot of time studying this, and he's he said it all, as far as I'm concerned at the moment.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay. Okay, I just want to say this, Kurt. I just have to tell you that I'll just sum it up, my response to what you said. Wow, you packed in quite a bit there, talking about flow, low alpha, high theta, and gamma. So that means we'll have to schedule to have you on again to talk. We could just talk about that issue, because the distinction that you just made for our audience, distinguishing between, you said that if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that flow is actually two states simultaneously, you know, from a neurofeedback standpoint, and then you distinguish that between moments of insight or the aha moment, you know, being in the gamma range. And so I know everyone wants to have insight and more aha moments and actually be in flow, because the other piece, my reaction to what you said was that, again, one of the gifts that Dr. Femi and his wife Susan have given to the world is that they both repeatedly say, and I know when I've been in their presence, they always say, just continue to fully immerse yourself into whatever experience that you're having. And the beauty of that statement, and when you reflect on it, is simply that that does take care of both the hypo side and the hyper side. So whether or not you're having an argument on the subway, you know, or PATH train, you know, fully immersed into that experience, or being jostled in Grand Central, or having a massage, or being on vacation, or doing yoga exercise, I think our experience of living is broadened and deepened and enriched by being in, you know, the open focus state and having that awareness.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I would just end with saying that as you get into it, one of the most surprising things about open focus is that you can have these styles simultaneously. And maybe that's a discussion for another time. But as I was saying to you, you know, the Master and His Emissary book really gave me a context to understand why that is, you know, in relationship to the brain.
Yes, and I have it right here on the desk, Kurt. And during our next chat, we can talk about the five attentional styles from the standard neuropsychological standpoint versus Dr. Femi's model of four attentional styles.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, open focus really means all those styles at once. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kurt and Joan. This is very rich material indeed. You both certainly will have to be our guest again, and we appreciate the time you spent with us today. Would you both tell our audience what is the best way they could contact you and work with each of you, should they like to?
Well, dissolvingpain.com is our main website, and right now Joan's webinar with the Femis is still up and available for purchase, and you could also send any queries to Kurt@dissolvingpain.com, and we'll both get it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you both so much. So for those of you who would like to contact either Kurt or Joan, check their website, dissolvingpain.com. That's DISSOLVINGPAIN, dissolvingpain.com, or email them at Kurt@dissolvingpain.com. Again, we want to thank you both so much for being on the show. And Kurt and Joan, would you like to share a final thought with our audience that they can take away from today's broadcast?
You know, what's the takeaway? All I can say is an attentional shift is simply to remember the space between my eyes, the space between my ears, remembering that space is above you, below you, beside you, in front of you, and back of you. So for me, it's a reconnection to being interconnected and being in space, which is much better for me, at least, than being disconnected and isolated.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to thank you both for giving this this forum. It was, you know, really special, and the questions were great, and the context that you provided. So I'm sure your listeners are happy. Thank you very much.
Kurt and Joan, thank you. It was a pleasure to have you here today, and I'm certain that our audience appreciated hearing what you had to say about how you use open focus and mindfulness-based awareness in your practice and in your lives. Certainly, for those who are new to this work, the idea of being aware of space and the shifting of attention may be something that they're now curious to experience for themselves. Again, we look forward to having you back on a future podcast.
I want to thank our audience for listening. Wherever you are, in whatever time zone you are in, we welcome and look forward to your comments about our show. Please contact us through our website with your feedback and suggestions. Remember, listeners, if you'd like to experience the same benefits our coaching clients get with us and learn how to get control of your schedule or easy ways to dissolve your chronic pain, stress, or anxiety, feel free to call us at 954-900-2179. Mention that you heard our Stress Free Now podcast show, and your first session is absolutely free. Call today to schedule your appointment. For Christine Wright, this is Dr. Robert Wright Jr. of www.stressfreenow.info. Until next time, be safe and be well.